Bring this meeting to order. Can we all rise for the flag salute, please?
I pledge allegiance to the Republic of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you for being here tonight. Can we have a roll call, please?
Yes. Director Gatchel.
Here.
Director Ohilski. Director Womack. Vice President Sesenia.
Here.
And President Borcroy.
I'm here. Okay, moving on to our general action item, introducing the ordinance regarding adopting provisions of the Uniform Public Construction Cost Accounting Act, and review of a resolution to be subject to the act, review of the draft procurement policy.
Way to go. You said it all.
Now explain it.
I stumble over that act language. You know, we did present this to the Finance Advisory Committee on Monday evening. So we had started with the provisions of the act and then went into procurement policy. We thought we'd flip it tonight so it just makes a little more sense. So first we'll go over the procurement policy, try to point out the differences from what we're doing right now, and I'll try to make it brief so we don't get too bogged down in it. And then I'll go over the provisions of the act and how that enters into the procurement policy so you understand the differences we're making there. Just a little bit of background, the original policy, it's actually called expenditure control policy in ours, but it's, we're changing that to procurement. It was originally adopted back in 2000. It had a minor update in 2016. At the beginning of COVID, we did implement emergency measures that basically increased the general manager's spending limit. So because of not having directors and staff really interacting much during that period, which we are still under to this date because the emergency continues. So I'm going to get in. It's a little hard to see. If you have your agenda packet, I suggest going to attachment 4. I tried to underline and enlarge the parts I wanted to point out. Under our current guidelines, the oversight, you know, it splits between the budget and signing vouchers, which, you know, Matthew was doing right before now, you know, that. That's one of our checks and balances, you know, plus me signing vouchers. But we do have the budget as a guiding document. But what we want to do is shift control over to the board and the budget and have that as the control document. So paired with more detailed expenditure reporting by us, mid-year budget review, and then, of course, our monthly reviews with the Finance Committee, we want to make sure that's more robust as we move forward, and I'll explain why in a minute here. So basically, what we want to do is, you know, the board authorizes spending, you know, staff executes the budget. We have our monthly reporting to the board and FAC. FAC has taken a very pivotal role. They're very good at analyzing the warrants, the financials, and any other financial information that comes. Then typically mid-year, we'll adjust things that aren't quite right. And so those two will remain our checks and balances in what we're talking about tonight. And right now, we really don't have clear, and I'll talk a little bit more about the emergency and unbudgeted items. But again, that would be more of a smaller loop of information that would be beyond, you know, the monthly reporting and mid-year. That would be more along the lines of me reporting back when we're making unexpected or unbudgeted expenditures. So right now, the board requires all checks above $25,000, our guidelines, to have two signatures. So mine and a director. And that's in most circumstances. And as you know, for those that have been around a while, actually before COVID, directors signed every check, even if it was under $25,000. So then when COVID hits, we increased the signing authority to the $50,000. And I only needed to check in with the board and board president if it was over $50,000. And this seems to have been working well. So what we wanted to do is retain the $50,000 threshold. You know, it just simplifies the requirements, but it keeps the board involved. Again, if you look back to the monthly statements that we have, FAC review, and then the catch-all at the mid-year, we feel this is a threshold that has worked for the last 2.5 years and has streamlined how we work. You know, it's not getting a director in a timely manner. We were missing payments or late on payments because we couldn't get a warrant out or a checkout to get a director in. So, you know, it's actually from a staff perspective working well, and I don't believe the directors have seen any wrinkles by doing it this way. So that's one of the big differences. So for unbudgeted expenditures, this one's a little bit more, it was hard. And I forgot to really thank Julian. He was instrumental in getting this together. So I'm going to ask him to chime in from time to time if I'm not quite explaining it right. And I do want to thank Laura, because Laura and I started this, but Julian was really good about pushing it to where we are tonight. So anyway, right now, it's for unbudgeted expenditures, it's $25,000 and 10% of budget. Now, that's kind of a hard one to, what does that really mean? And so we thought, well, you know, right, and during our declaration right now, it's just any expenditure over $25,000, which is fine. But we thought we'd just make it if it exceeds the budget by 20%, because we don't see a lot of unbudgeted expenditures. They're usually more associated with an emergency, which we also will have a provision for in here. But these are typically, things that come up, like with a well, or we need to purchase a part for something, things that we hadn't anticipated. So that's kind of where that's at. And, as we go now, I usually, if they're bigger, big dollar enough, I do bring those back to the board and tell you about those.
I had a question about that piece. What I didn't understand is if an unbudgeted expenditure exceeds 20% of a budget. So I'm not sure, I don't understand where the budget is for an unbudgeted item. That's the part I didn't get.
Well, it would be, and if you want to jump in here, it'd be, we have GL codes. And then with it, the GL codes big build up to the object level. And so if we're something comes up, this isn't a great example, but it's a high ticket item. When 10th Street well went out, we had a repair and maintenance budget for wells, but it wasn't big enough to cover that expenditure. That was like bigger than we had ever anticipated. I don't know if you have a better example.
I would think, especially in this environment, the 20% would really be catch inflation and unexpected just cost growth from when we budgeted at the beginning of the year. Whereas the emergency provision, which is right, the next slide, really gets into if something happens that's unexpected that was not built into the planning of the budget, be it an emergency like an asset breaking or usually an asset. I think that's the best example would be an emergency.
Okay, so when we're saying unbudgeted expenditures, we're saying like something we had planned for, but it's costing more than we anticipated.
Exactly, that's, and it would be in that line item. So it may not be, the widget you had budgeted for, it was something else, but that category of thing would be the intention.
All right, thank you.
And so we don't have an emergency provisions now. So this would institute one of those. And it's basically, this would probably be, would be a better example for this, where we may have had a lot of budget in our R&M for wells, but something where we had to expend a lot more money would fall under the emergency. But again, this is where then I'd come back within that 30 days and say, hey, we had to spend $30,000 than what we had budgeted. So this is adding it, this would be a new control in the budget or in the guidelines. Right now we have nothing for this particular one relates to if there's a federally declared emergency and FEMA comes in and we're eligible for money. We don't have a policy on how to accept that. And the federal government is very strict on how you take in federal money. So this is for emergencies. And this one's for grants. If we go out and get a federal grant, they have requirements that you have something in your purchase or procurement policy that talks to how you receive and handle grants, federal grants.
What about state level?
State, we already received. They're not as the federal grants are just really specific on a lot of things. Typically, I've tried to avoid them, but in the world we're in right now, there's a lot of federal money out there, and if we can get it, because the reporting requirements are amazing. Then the auditing, it actually would cost us more in our audit, annual audit, once you've received a federal grant.
They've got to be large, I would think, to make it worthwhile.
Right. Here's another one that's new. We don't have a non-competitive procurement policy. This is like sole source. We have been doing an occasional sole source. Mr. Minery has provided us with language on how to make findings to do that. This would just formalize how we do it in our procurement policy. And again, this is like, for instance, when we've been doing some like well work, and Cleith Harris is the most knowledgeable consultant for that. I've come back with sole source contracts for them. That'd be an example for something like that. Again, this is more of on a staff level. Right now, we don't have in our policy that we can make EFTs or ACH transfers of money, which this is instead of writing a check, you can transfer. As I'm learning, and actually Mechanics Bank's been great on educating us, checks aren't the most secure way to pay bills. And so we are trying to move towards more electronic forms of payment. So we need that in our procurement policy to do it without breaking a rule our guidelines don't have.
Does the there's EFTs. What about wiring? Is that part of the EFT piece? Wiring funds, those could be different than ACH.
Right. I think wiring would be a really exceptional just because the costs are higher for each wire. In every case I've seen, vendors have been able to do one or the other. So
I think when we did our fire truck purchase, we had to do a wire. So that's the only experience I've had in 3 years.
I just didn't know if that language needs to be here in addition to that, because ACH and wiring are different.
That's a good point. Have it in there, but maybe I would recommend that we have something in saying that's
stipulation on cost. And
exactly. It's for exceptional situations.
Good. Let's see. This is kind of the concept of piggybacking, where I know at the city of San Luis Obispo and other cities and at the county, we did this where if there's a vehicle purchase or something, some sort of piece of equipment, if they've already done a procurement procedure on it and have a list of vendors that had qualified, you can kind of piggyback on so you don't have to go out and do your own, request for proposals or, bid. So I don't know how much we would use it, but it's good to have in there for specific situations that may arise. We didn't have any kind of language for conflict of interest and ethical conduct for staff or our officials. So this is just adding something that we feel would kind of round out the policy. I didn't want to get into the weeds too much on this, but it's going back to, we do have purchase orders in our guidance right now, but we don't really utilize them the way they were envisioned to be used. So what we're going to do, and this goes back to some of the practices we want to instill to make sure we're still very transparent, the board understands how we're spending money, and that when we go through our audits, an auditor can say we are have the controls in place. So basically, using our purchase order policy, but expanding it somewhat on how and when we use them, is that we go, well, what did we ask for from a vendor? How much did the vendor charge us for something? And then finally, the last step is when you get at the end, does everything match? So you have what Julian put this together as a simple approach to try to explain that, you know, everything matches when you get to what you finally requested from a vendor. I don't know if there's anything you want
to... That's exactly it. It's just making sure that we have internal controls in place to give you the assurance that the procurements are happening as planned. And then it's also good for the auditors. And if someday we do receive federal grants, this would be critical.
That makes a lot of sense to me for like equipment. What about for services? Like, well, if we have a construction job, and how are we gonna make sure we get what we paid for?
Well, that's typically for RFP, you know, for professional services, I think, isn't the next slide I need to talk to.
Yeah, but I could address that. Ahead. There's really two levels to it. Right. For professional services that are routine, that don't have a robust contract, it's really an attestation from the department head saying, yes, this was delivered as they promised or we agreed. And then with more robust contracts, it's really having those terms and conditions in the contract that specify the performance. And so that's much more case by case.
Because typically with professional services, we have a specific scope of work. It's not like a purchase order at Miners where you need a piece of something and you go down and then we review those. So is there...
Do we issue POs for construction, or do we just have it? How does that work for us? Because we don't, everything we do is lump summed, right? Like it's, here's the scope of work, here's how much it costs.
Right, that's for bigger projects. Right. You know, we do smaller, like paving, for instance. I was trying to think of an instance, but typically we'll go out and get two or three quotes and choose the lowest. And what we've provided them for the quote is kind of that scope of work. You know, it's going to be a one lane, 100 feet long, because the water line blew it out, that kind of thing.
So we have like our QAQC for that is within the construction contracts itself.
Yes.
And those we're approving separately. We're not issuing purchase orders for those.
Well, pieces. In the future, we will.
Got it.
Right.
And the purchase order would be based off of the contract. You have the contract as kind of an umbrella thing that guides the purchase order that then gives the instructions for the line items that should be checked off and compared against the invoice.
Because like right now, we'll like, you know, we finishing up 16th Street tank. We just had a stretch of blacktop that had to be repaired. Our water crew leader went out and got three quotes. We picked the lowest, you know, quote and said authorized the work, but we didn't do a purchase order, but we've got paperwork to back it up. So we're just adding that piece on top that assures we're getting through the three legs when we get to the end.
So I guess maybe I'm talking about like construction observation. So that's probably something that we would set up during when we decide to do some sort of larger public works type of thing.
Right, okay. Right. And those are, then are very specific. If it was a smaller one, though, it could be done by purchase order. Let's say we wanted Cleith Harris to I can't think of a great example, but do a small job, maybe $5,000.
Right.
You know, we would do a purchase order, you know, say this is XYZ, what we want you to do. And then we would follow that up with an invoice that demonstrated he did X, Y, and Z.
Okay. All right. Makes sense.
No, good questions. I'm glad you're asking. This is important.
Yeah, the contracts could be fixed bid or time and materials.
Right.
Or a mixture.
Right.
Depending on what it is. And then you would have purchase order that goes along with those terms.
Right. And then we'll get into the bigger projects here. That's when you get into
my head.
Yeah, no, but no, these are, it's good because this is a lot of our day-to-day stuff is at this level, you know, and that's why we want to make sure we're
and this is a 5,000 minimum.
Yes.
Purchase order.
Right. Okay. So then you have materials, supplies, equipment, and services, which is still very similar to, you know, purchasing equipment or whatever. Again, well, it's the whole same concept. Anything different in here you wanted to point out, Julian, or?
No, yes, the recurring expenditures is one difference. We addressed that in our prior expenditure control policy as a separate item. We've included it in here just as more of a catch-all because there are certain recurring expenditures and how we go out to bid for them or not and the agreements we have supporting them.
Yeah. But the dollar amounts are the same.
Yes.
In the process. And then this is professional services. Right now, you know, anything over 15,000 requires a request for proposal. And Julian did this implied but not stated that over 25,000 requires RFP and then board approval for anything over 25,000. We're suggesting moving that up to 50,000 just because of the time it takes and how expensive things have got. That number is from the early 2000s. And so this is just more reflective of what inflation has done over time. The probably the type of work hasn't changed, just the cost has gone up.
I guess this same thing for, on the other one, you had a minimum of two vendors.
Right.
Like between 10,000, 50,000, I think. Would we do the same thing on professional services? Have a two vendor minimum. Do we need to state that in here?
As written right now, we left the professional services up with a little more discretion, depending on the case. So that is was intentionally more open-ended than the materials and supplies and recurring. But we could easily add that in to make it more rigid. We just felt there might be circumstances in which the general manager might want to exercise discretion.
Yeah, I just didn't know. Yeah. I don't know if the board has an opinion on it, but if we wanted to make it consistent to the other policy that you just had there previously.
I guess a little tricky with, I understand why we want that discretion because we have subject matter experts on like the basin, for instance, mm-hmm. that we want to be able to retain that knowledge base. But in general, you're right. I haven't noticed that like that we go out to bid on smaller things. Like we usually are dealing with the Wallace Group or
professional services is harder too, right? You don't have subject matter experts.
It's the $50,000 and less. You know, we do the formal process if it's above the 50,000. So again, if you're doing a big project, I think the last contract sole source we did with Spencer was maybe over 50, mm-hmm. but it was the well project and construction management.
Well, don't we have our sole source? Didn't we just line that out a second ago?
Right.
I lost it.
it's
right here somewhere.
It is right the second page of the task force.
Okay, outlines professional services. Category outlines related conditions such as one. Yeah, I wouldn't mind putting some language in over $50,000 piece there about having.
Takes board approval.
Yeah, it's right? Board approval. Those would we could put in for clarification because that's definitely we'd go out for multiple.
Yeah, right.
You know, proposals.
Yeah.
Unless I came back with sole source recommendation.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So I think it's for under if you want to add anything.
But I don't think we need to. It was just a solid. Slightly different.
Slightly different. Yeah. And it's recognizing professional services are different.
Oh, yeah.
50,000 doesn't buy what it used to.
No. No, I'm fine with
it. So we're okay then? Okay.
Yeah.
Right. And then here we're getting into, I'll call it the act. I'm going to give you a little more information, but basically this allows latitude. I'll just get into this next part, because it'll kind of summarize what we do. But right now, anything between 1,000 and 25,000 is informal bidding. Anything over 25,000 is with board approval, and it doesn't go any further in explanation of that. So let me give you a little bit of background here, so we all understand what the Act is. It's actually been around for quite a while, since 1983. It only applies to public projects. It's not like maintenance work. It provides us with a uniform cost accounting standard for construction work performed or contracted by a public agency. This is something that a lot of agencies have moved to, and I'll speak to that in just a second. So it's something a lot of contractors are familiar with. They understand, you know, the requirements, and that there is oversight by the state controller's office on this, and there's procedures that we'll have to follow once if we adopt the act. We do qualify as a public agency. And in California, there's over 300 special districts that use the act. Here in this county, I know most CSDs do, like Napomo, Oceano, Templeton, Heritage Ranch, and Cambria. It's nothing new even in our county. So here's the thresholds. You can do by, you know, force account is we can use our own workforce. That's what that means. We can negotiate by contract or by purchase order. So we don't have to go out to, you know, staff can go out, get quotes, bids, you know, proposals for whatever type of work we're doing, and we can just negotiate a contract. For the bigger projects starting over 60,000 to 200, it's a little more, you can still use informal procedures, but it would take board action to for approval for the contract, and a contract is required. And then when you get into the bigger projects, it's like what we do right now for like most of our projects. It's just a formal bid process. Any questions about those levels? And so if we go ahead, and so we're going to incorporate that in, that's what that last part of the differences were. We have to adopt the resolution, which is part of the action tonight, introduced print, I'm sorry, which is part of the action tonight. Next month we adopt the ordinance, we have to also adopt a resolution telling the state that we're going to become subject to the act. And I put a draft resolution in the board packet for that. And then, of course, the other part tonight is to review the procurement policy and provide direction, which you have. So the sequence of events here would be to come back in October with the actual public hearing for the adoption of the ordinance on October 6th. Then I put on consent the resolution and the procurement policy, unless you'd like to go over that again in October, but we'll incorporate your directions tonight into that. So that's our recommendation for this evening.
Okay, thank you. This time I'd like to take public comment on this item.
If you'd like to make comment online, please raise your hand or come up to the podium in person. There's no public comment this time.
Okay, bring that back to the board. Is there any further discussion, questions, or is there a motion ready to go?
I just want to say, I kind of feel like we've overlooked a lot of dot and I's, crossing T's, keeping up in the past 15 years or so. And it's kind of nice to just update policy and procedure now and then.
Yeah, on that note, since I got here 3 years ago, it was my mission to update all our policies, and this is the last one.
We should have cake.
Okay. Do we have a motion?
I recommend the board approve the introduction and first reading of ordinance number 2022-02 by title, only adding the title one of the district's code incorporating provisions of the California Uniform Public Construction Cost Accounting Act, attachment one, set the public hearing date for final adoption for October 6, 2022, and direct staff to publish the appropriate hearing notices, review a resolution electing to become subject to the California Uniform Public Construction Cost Accounting Act, and provide direction to staff, review the draft procurement policy and provide direction to staff.
I'll second that. You feel like you've got direction?
Yes.
That's needed?
And I thank you. That is all very good.
Okay, there's no, yeah, I can do a just a open vote, right?
Roll call.
I do need a roll call?
Yeah. Okay. Ordinance.
Okay. Roll call vote.
All right. Director Gatchel.
Yes.
Vice President Sesenia.
Yes.
And President Corcoran.
Yes. Thank you for preparing that information. It was really helpful. Very clear. Okay, moving on to public comments for items not on this agenda.
If you'd like to make a comment online, please raise your hand or come up to the podium in person. Yeah, one. Oh, are you coming up? Okay, we'll do online afterwards. Oh, it's probably easier since you're here. It's okay.
Okay. I am here this evening to speak on behalf of the heart of our little town, which is our park.
Could you identify yourself, please?
Oh, yeah.
For the record, yeah.
Cam Hostetter.
Thank you.
Live here in Los Osos. And I'm speaking on behalf of our park, our library, our skate park, the tennis courts, all of it. About a year ago, a group of us worked to get Oklahoma, and that was when the buildup in our little heart of Los Osos was so bad that we ended up with several drug dealers, pedophile, a lot of mental health issues, and we found it unsustainable for being able to use our little park. And so a group of us got together, worked with the Board of Supervisors, and what happened was Oklahoma is almost filled up, although there are still some spaces, but they have not moved all of the residents that live on Palisades. And unfortunately, it builds because it was put online, and so you can Google and get free parking on Palisades. So it's not going to end. At the time, one of the things we did was we got a no camping ordinance, which did help to a degree. But now I'm here to respectfully request that you guys support us in doing something that a lot of the cities that are starting to do, LA, San Francisco, Oakland, they've all written a policy of no one is allowed to live on the streets, on the sidewalks, anywhere near 1,000 feet from parks, churches, daycare, schools, preschool facilities, and public parks or libraries. So that is where we're moving now and working with the Board of Supervisors. And we would really love it if you guys would join in with us and try to finish the cleanup that we started about a year, year and a half ago. And what we were thinking was, is if you guys would put together and write a letter, we've started going back to the Board of Supervisors, the little group of us that got this initial cleanup happening. And we feel like we're kind of at a standstill because it's not quite being enforced to the completion of cleaning up Palisades. So that's my request for tonight, and hope that you guys would help us in that endeavor. Thank you.
Becky McFarland, Los Osos, good to be back with y'all. I went to the Board of Supervisors meeting this past month and spoke to this also. We are thankful that the county has come up with a new five-year plan. For those of you that don't know, there was a 10-year plan that happened 14 years ago to end homelessness, and now there's a five-year plan to cut it in half. And we're thankful for the Oklahoma Avenue Safe parking site. But I'm here because over the past month, there were up to 22 vehicles on Palisades Avenue. And I commend our county sheriffs for being responsive to our calls about illegal parking on that street, and for their code enforcement in keeping trash, flammable liquids, and other items off the street. A few months ago, we spoke to the Board of Supervisors about vehicles that never left Palisades and were not made to move to legal safe parking sites. They're also not being asked to just even move from place to place. Some have been in the same spot for 3 years. Over the past few weeks, I've spent many hours on the phone speaking with our sheriff's commander, CAPS Low personnel, and county personnel trying to find out what is the holdup. Ourselves and the sheriff's department have been told that there is no space at either Oklahoma Avenue or Railroad Square. Come to find out, there have been 11 open spaces at Oklahoma and up to 30 spaces at Railroad Square. Railroad Square has a check-in time from 6 to 7 p.m. and our no camping ordinance does not go into effect until 1/2 hour after sunset. What time sunset tonight? Way past check-in time. So that makes it difficult for our sheriffs to enforce. So what we're asking for now, and we asked the board for this, is we want a 10 to 6 p.m. parking ban, complete parking ban on Palisades, and a daytime limit of 4 hours. This will allow our law enforcement to enforce the law. In addition, we're asking for chains to be installed across the community center parking lot. We've had people living in there for over a year in the parking lot. Some of them like to relieve themselves there. The center parking lot smells. If you're having a quinceañera or a wedding and you step out of your car and it smells like human urine, that's a turnoff. And that's a moneymaker for the community center. They need those rentals. We'd also like to see that at the, did I say library parking lot entrance, and for the tennis courts to be locked at night. These are things that the CSD board can help to support. In addition, I'm asking that you help us in asking for more community action teams, which are made up specifically trained or specially trained sheriff's officer and a psych tech. In the past, we had Jim Fellows, who's a Los Osan on that team. He had to have neck surgery, so we no longer have him. Is that the end? Anyway, support us on that. We really need your help. And you all live here, so this affects you and your kids. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we have one request online. Patrick McGivney, please unmute yourself, and I'll start the clock when you speak.
Thank you. My name is Patrick McGivney. I am the chair of the Los Osos Sustainability Group. And these comments are for you as the CSD board and also as one of the major contributors to the Basin Management Committee. So first of all, I'd like to just start talking about, agenda and financing. And I'd like to thank all of the directors on here for the great job that they do, and to Ron Munns for all the work he's put into everything. So this has nothing, no negativity about any of the work that you do. I really support that and thank you for everything. But dealing with financing, there was an article in the Tribune just recently, and its title was Two Slow County Water Projects Get More Than $23 Million Total from Biden Administration. And they were for basically water recycling. I mean, that's what those projects got the money for. Doesn't mean that our local wastewater project couldn't have gotten some money for other projects also. But the point being is that there was $23 million given out for water projects, and we didn't get a penny of it. There was also money that the Salud Carbajal was able to get for Central Coast infrastructure projects, millions and millions of dollars. One of the projects was Cambria Seawater Desal Plant. They got $200,000. Goleta Valley Community Center, they got $6 million. So there's millions and millions of dollars that were being put out for community projects that we didn't get a penny of. And I spoke to the assistant for Congressman Carbajal, Greg Haas, and he said the reason we didn't get anything is because no one applied. So this is money that we could have gotten for all sorts of projects that not only the CSD, but also the BMC really needs. So this goes to an item that I would like to speak about, and this is Sigma. If we were on Sigma as a BMC, if we were to go to Sigma instead of our adjudicated basin program that we are on now, there would be a lot more funding that would be available for us. Plus, we would have more authority, such as metering all private wells, which we now only assume the amount of water that they use. That was something actually that was brought up on the agenda at the BMC one time about 2 months ago. Director Cody, asked to have that on the agenda. Your representative, Marshall Ohilski, asked for a vote on whether that was something people wanted to talk about. And of course, speaking for the CSD, he voted no, the county voted no, and of course, Golden State, because if there is a—
Patrick, you're at 3 minutes.
I'd like to give Patrick two more minutes to finish his piece of talking.
Thank you. So the point being is that Marshall Ohilski was speaking for the CSD. I would like the CSD to put on the agenda about possibilities of going for Sigma and talk about the pros and cons for that. And then direct Marshall Ohilski for the BMC to support that being on the BMC agenda also. And in the meantime, if you can't get the Sigma ongoing yet, at least support a PGA. So everything then would be more equal. We would have more funding for the community as far as, you know, there would be property taxes, of course, would be raised if you had a joint powers agreement or something with all the community or all the purveyors involved in it. But that would at least do something for our funding deficit that we have now. So please support getting Sigma on your agenda and directing Ohilski to be speaking for Basin Management Committee. And also please go for a GPA if in the meantime for that. And that's all I have to say. Thank you so much for what you're doing.
Okay, thank you, Patrick.
And we have a request for one more comment online.
Okay.
Emily Miggins, please unmute yourself.
Hi guys, I'm here for everything that Patrick just listed off. That was fantastic, Pat. I'd like to add in just a little, I'm always interested in educating and seeing people get educated. And I had read in the CSD, I think manager notes, and then at the BMC, last one I attended, that there would be outreach and education from different CSD, you know, board members or whatever. This isn't obviously a first round of drought and emergency preparedness for drought in the state of California. And there's a lot of great examples out there for flyers, mailers. I've seen the sign at LOVR, the electric sign about saving water, but I think we've got to do a little bit more outreach and education. I have, you know, 100 plus some people on our Los Osos for Good Governance, and clearly that doesn't represent the whole of Los Osos. So I would love to see more outreach. And if you guys need ideas, I'm sure that many of us that are very invested in the issue of water use savings and the how-tos and sustainability would be happy to help ideate and have, you know, a great session on how that could be done. I mean, I've put in my time with PUC and some other agencies on reaching out to Californians about water use. Lastly, I 100% just wanna mimic and ask for the same as what Becky McFarland is asking for your support. It's very much needed for the Palisades camping situation. It's not, as many of you know, I'm the whatever representative, board representative for Fire Safe Council. I did let the chief know a couple weeks ago that it was picking up pace again with the camping, and it's just not safe. We need our county to do more. We need our sheriffs to enforce that no parking position. And you know, we're just not seeing it. We're not seeing the response that we need. So anything the CSD can do to positively persuade the leaders in charge at county, that would be wonderful. Thanks, and have a great evening, everyone.
There are no more public comment.
Okay, I appreciate it, Julian. I guess I just wanted to
say one thing to kind of give some background with Pam and Becky's comments is that they came and spoke at Parks and Rec, and that was and then we let them know that they should probably come here and talk to the whole board. And if we were interested in writing a letter or directing staff to do that in a future agenda item, one of the nexus that we could come up with on that piece of it is our Palisades well. And we have our infrastructure there that is also being used as garbage / bathroom / all sorts of things. So that could be a starting point for us to, throw our hat in that ring and ask for some changes to be made. I wanted to bring that up, point it out for future agenda items.
Yes, that's a direct connection, and I'm glad there is one. It's unfortunate that we need and should have, I guess. But this is an important part of our community, and it's a very difficult situation. Capslo is trying to run Oklahoma. I think they're going to do it. They have a lot of reservations, and if Capslo has reservations, then this is serious business. You can't force people to go to Railroad Square or Oklahoma. They are by choice. And I'm sad that there's conflicting information about whether they're full or not. To my knowledge, and being a Capslo board member, there were spaces available. But again, you cannot force people to go there. How do you get people off? The imposition of a daytime hourly limit, that's been used to other places. I don't see why that wouldn't be a useful tool. It's an unfortunate situation that occurred right in the middle of our town. If I had the resources, I'd go after the social media companies that continue to perpetuate this kind of thing. But is that in our legal budget? We can't. So whatever we can support, I think that we need to talk about that.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, agendize this?
Okay. I think so.
Yeah, we don't even have to wait for future agenda items.
No, let's do that. Okay. Oh, and the other item, the Sigma item that we heard about, I'll address that during my UAC committee report.
Perfect. Next, I guess, question on the Parks and Rec piece. Sorry, I wasn't at that last meeting, but for putting chains and all that kind of stuff around the library area, where would that funding come from? Would that some Parks and Rec could help with, or is that the county area?
But
that
kind of it's county parking lot. Both of those are. So I don't know if we offered to pay, but they'd have to have the ultimate decision to do it.
Yes. Yeah. We didn't get into any details. Just
that would get complicated.
How we could show that, we have a vested interest in this, not only as stewards of our community, but also, our own facilities are sitting there, our future dog park that we have, MOU is in that area also. So there's some good ways to really present that in a really rock solid way where we have a good base to go from.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay, moving on to administrative and committee reports. I know we have a new format for our fire department report. So is Paul on at all tonight?
No, he's not.
Okay, I can.
Yeah, go, well, ahead. I guess, oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm excited about this. Ron and I worked pretty diligently with two chiefs to get. And Paul Province is our chief here at Station 15, but to get some more detail here about what Station 15 is doing and what calls we're responding to, the volume of calls, when our reserves get called out, and then also when Station 15 is called out of our area to do mutual aid, and also when resources are pulled into our area to give that reciprocation back. So that's some of the details that are in here, which I think we're working on a new format for this report. And I think, as we digest it a little more, there's some things that maybe we want to see or we don't care about so much, but Chief's working to help us have really good transparent information that we can use to show that we're performing per expectations. Is there anything
to add to that? It's something that, like Matthew said, we've been working on. And so I appreciate Chief Province, stepping up and doing it.
And I appreciate the effort to develop that relationship. It's been a while, and that's a large contract that we administer. And so I appreciate the effort from both of you.
What's the company 15 callback?
Yeah, I'll go through these, and Ron, if you when I stumble, you're gonna have to fill in. But company 15 is our reserves.
Right.
So that's when the reserves get called in, when our resources are tied up.
So it's so we have personnel at the station, have that coverage, but that's our reserve.
So this really, we're having this year to, to really take a good look at our reserve program and make sure that it's benefiting the district and benefiting reserves.
Also. And this will play into the strategic plan we want to develop. Are we appropriately staffed? Is the reserve program effective, or do we need to change to a different staffing model? Those are the kind of questions we have.
So we're just trying to keep an eye on that, basically. The next part is basically all of the calls in our area, in our district. And so that should be every single one of them for the time period that we have. That's why that's so long. We called out MDO responses in particular. Mm-hmm. So there's those ones. We also, our station has the watercraft for the county. So
for the North Coast, yeah.
Yeah, for the North Coast part of, but it's CAL FIRE's piece of equipment. So
good question.
So that's a piece of the puzzle too, that it's a service that we're helping provide as a district to the whole North Coast. And then these are the next page is the mutual aids that we went and helped with outside of CSA 9, outside of our district. And then the next page is the mutual aid that we received in that same time frame. And then then behind that is our graphs of all the different types of calls, and to try to get some statistics behind, what they're, we have a big volume, but what are they actually up to? So you can see the different stats there. It's pretty, they run a lot of medical.
Right.
Yes.
Absolutely. Of those graphs.
633 Ramona.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. I'll move on to the Sheriff Department report. You have any sheriff here tonight?
No.
How about CHP?
Yes, I believe we do. Lieutenant Grime.
Jason Grime, you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. Hello. Good evening.
Oh, perfect. Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. Sorry. Coming to you live from my car here at Dairy Creek. We went long a little today, so I'm coming to you from the car. We have 7 incidents to report for the month of August. 4 of them are DUI traffic collisions, and the other 3 are traffic collisions. I'll start with the DUI traffic collisions. The first was on August 8th at about 3 p.m. Is there a question?
No.
Okay. Oh, thought I heard somebody. Okay. Yeah, sorry. It was the first was a DUI collision, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It was a solo vehicle into a curb in the Ralph's parking lot. That was on the 9th. The second was on the 18th at about 8:26 p.m. I was at South Bay and Yama Lane. That was a solo vehicle collision, which resulted in a rollover vehicle. And thankfully, no injuries or very minor injuries as a result of that. The third was on the 26th at 11:15 p.m. And that was at 990 Los Osos Valley Road. And that was a 2-vehicle non-injury traffic collision, which one vehicle backed into the other vehicle and the driver was found to be DUI. The fourth was on the 30th and that was at 2:50 p.m. And that was a LOVR at Willow. And that was a 2-vehicle non-injury traffic collision of the T-bone type. which resulted in major injury or major damage to the vehicles, but not injury, thankfully. And then the three traffic collisions that we had, the first was on the 2nd. That was at 3:10 p.m. and that was at Willow and Los Osos Valley Road. Two vehicle, minor injury traffic collision. The second was on the 22nd. That was at 10:35 p.m. Los Osos Valley Road at Turi. That was a hit and run, and we have no follow-up information on that vehicle. And then the final was on the 29th at 8:40 p.m. That was at South Bay at Los Osos Valley Road. Two vehicle, non-injury, very minor traffic collision. Other than that, that was 7 incidents we had to report for the month.
Okay. Thanks, Lieutenant. Yeah, we definitely, it's back to school time. So that's, I think, on everyone's radar. And I know everybody would appreciate next time we're in line for the speed trailer to plunk it somewhere on LOVR or El Moro near Baywood or Monarch Grove or over by the junior high and help remind people that school's back. Kids are trying
to cross. Absolutely. I think last time we talked, I put in a traffic complaint for the school going back in session. So hopefully somebody was out there for that. And then the radar trailer, I think you'll be about 3rd down on the list. So maybe by the end of the month, okay. We got a few ahead of you guys from last month requesting it.
Yeah, I definitely have gotten some really positive feedback that people are really liking the trailer and seeing people pump the brakes when they get a big number. So I appreciate your help.
Awesome. Yeah, we're glad that's working. Thank you, guys.
All right. Have a great night. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Okay, let's move to our general manager's report.
Thank you very much. Did want to do a very quick update on our program C well, which we are changing to the Bay Oaks well. That's going to be our official name for it. They have completed the test hole, done all the analysis to finish the design. Cleather Spencer Harris has completed the design. They've ordered materials. They're going to start work back up on September 6th. It'll take them about a week to complete the casing and gravel pack. Then we'll move into the development of the well. Should be wrapped up by the end of the month, but they're making good progress, moving forward quickly on that. On my general manager's report, I included a letter from the County of San Luis Obispo Public Works Department regarding a request to participate in their upcoming phase one of their regional desalination project. I included it because they're going to ask us for a resolution for participation at some point this fall. I don't know if it'll be for October or November meeting. I think it'll probably be November's meeting. There's no cost to the district to be included in the scope of work at this phase. As you know, we've talked about getting a connection outside of San Luis or outside of Los Osos for water, supplemental water. And this would be one of the reasons to build that pipeline and be in line to when this project does come to fruition, which they're estimating this is a long-term project. This is out there about 20, 25, 2030, 2035 even. There's a timeline back here. I didn't look to get those exact dates, but it's out there quite a ways. So anyway, I'll be back with a report and a request for that, but I just wanted to give you a heads up that it's coming. We have been involved with the group Save Cuesta Inlet. They've been very well organized. I attended one of their executive committee meetings. They're very motivated to come up with a solution to acquire that property. I did not commit the district to any type of participation other than my time to stay informed. They did come to our Parks and Recs meeting. Andrea Luca, who is on that committee, is also on their executive committee. So she's been providing us updates, but I think it's a very worthwhile project and we should just keep our eye on it, and I'll keep you updated as more information comes up. And moving to some of our solid waste authority that we have now. I had my first meeting with Cal Recycle staff. It was a Zoom meeting, so they're up in Sacramento, we were down here. They emphasize the importance of us meeting the deadlines in all these bills that I listed in here. There's a lot of mandatory reporting requirements that we're responsible for. Fortunately, the IWMA is going to handle a lot of the actual programmatic part of it, but we'll be responsible for enforcement if and when that does happen. And then finally, there's a solid waste rate setting manual that's been around since 1994 that almost every agency in the county has been using to set solid waste rates. It's very dated. I was actually on the committee or part of the group, the team that created that manual. So it is very old. So, excuse me, we're doing an update. And this will be a good effort to kind of get everything in that we've been missing and kind of been adding along, but haven't formally adopted. Finally, I wanted to recognize a couple of our employees, Carol Gilmer, who is our administrative tech. Administrative clerk. She's been with us for 3 years this month. And then Nate Paul, our water crew leader, who has been with us for 12 years. And then, of course, I always want to say, remember the drought. We need to do our share. Watch your outdoor landscape watering. Cut it to a minimum and look for leaks.
I had one question about Program CEWA, just real quick about, I know we got the well driller. They're going to case it. They're going to complete the well downhole. Have we already purchased all of the surface equipment?
No, that's a, there's actually three phases to this. So that's the middle phase. Right now we have phase one, which is the drilling, and phase three, the pipeline design and process. We had to wait till we understand the water quality. Because that if there's anything that we have to treat for, like, you know, iron or manganese or something, that'd create a different scenario for building and whatnot. So as soon as we get the water quality, once we start pumping and take samples, then we'll start the equipping phase.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just professionally seeing some still continued crazy lead times, especially on electrical equipment, electrical panels, etc. Just wanted to see if we by chance already got that stuff.
We didn't have issues with the casing and gravel pack, which has been amazing. So
well, hopefully we get something that's in stock.
Gravel is still available. That's good.
And you can get it, you know, transported year round.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for the employee recognition too. Their staff is important to us, and congratulations on adding CWAT to another acronym group that you belong to.
You noticed that one.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to move on to a Parks and Rec committee meeting report. It's pretty simple. We basically talked about the Save Cuesta Inlet. Andrea gave us a presentation. We kicked around ideas of how, you know, potentially how the district could be involved in that, whether that's a funding source. I mean, we do have money in our Parks and Rec fund that is for the whole community, and how we could be potentially part of a solution for operation and maintenance. And part of how that gets funded, basically, through a voter initiative or going through a formal district process, which by no means have we been asked to do yet. We were kind of brainstorming ways that the community could help push that along if needed, if asked to. So that's basically what we talked about in a nutshell. Any questions about parks? All right, utilities.
Utilities. We met and talked about our usual projects and updates and that kind of thing. Went over the capital improvements plan, and everything was pretty standard, but we did get into a discussion. We heard Patrick McGibney on the phone tonight about the computer, about Sigma possibility and whether or not we would be better off under the Sigma umbrella, Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. If you don't know, all groundwater basins that are stressed have to have a plan to balance their basins by a certain time, 20 years from now, way too long from now. We were ahead of the curve. We were in adjudication before that, so we are not a Sigma basin. And there are times it has seemed to bump up against maybe funding that was available. Well, you're not a Sigma basin. You must not be important. And I think we can make the case that we are and work around some of those issues, but maybe there's a reason we should be. And an alternative to that is the JPA, Joint Powers Agreement, that Basin Management Committee has talked about and never done more than talk about. maybe it's time for a serious discussion there. The Utility Advisory Committee expressed interest in hearing more about the possibilities of becoming a Sigma Basin joint powers. I think that's something we've talked about enough that we need an in-depth discussion. It's time to move forward with more than just possibilities there. So I think what I would like to do is agendize a future item that maybe looks at JPA versus Sigma, advantages of each, disadvantages, what does it really mean? I know Golden State has issues with Sigma. Apparently they're not a full participant because you got to be a public agency or something like that, which I can see where they would have an issue with that. But on the other hand, I guess that's the situation in Edna Valley. I don't know how that's working, but it must be working. So there's just a lot, I think, that we need. And all these conversations do tend to bump up against forces at BMC that don't want to take them into a really fruitful discussion. So maybe it's time for that. I don't know. I guess I would like that to start here. And so that we can be clear before we ask the BMC to further that discussion. So if, I don't know if we really need a motion, I'd like a future agenda item maybe to look at those two parallel.
Are you thinking bring it at UAC first and discuss it there and then bring it to the board? Or are you thinking just straight to the board?
I don't know how soon any of that could happen.
Well, if I can interject there, fortunately or unfortunately, I'm taking a vacation for 2 weeks. And
it can be both.
I couldn't get it on the next UAC would be the problem, because I'm finishing that agenda up tomorrow.
Okay.
But if we wanted to flip it, I think I could have it done but for the October. Or we could push it out further and do UAC first. And
I don't know if it's that critical. Like I said, BMC, this has been talked about for a while. I don't want to rush this discussion because it's important.
So if I could request then that we push it out, do October UAC, November board.
If that's okay.
That'd give me ample time to get it together.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that group kind of deserves a crack at.
I think so too. I appreciate their work.
Yeah. All right, good. Thank you, Chuck, for that update. Finance Advisory Committee, Ron,
I can give a brief update. We talked about the procurement policy, and that was unanimously supported. And they also recommended approval of the warrants and the financials as presented in the board packet.
Okay. And also, the ESAC committee meeting, you had a busy.
Yes, we did. That's right. ESAC. No, that was a great meeting as well. We covered the budget, which they hadn't seen. And of course I did the financials for them. So we talked about that a bit. The two bigger items were the building condition assessment RFP, which is on the consent agenda tonight. I think that's a huge step forward. We're looking forward to getting that out next week. And then we also talked about a standard of cover study, and that is a study where you hire a consultant that comes in and analyzes the kind of data that we were seeing tonight, as part of Paul's report, that backup data, but it goes into more depth analysis. It talks about traffic. It talks about, future needs of the community, levels of service. And so the outcome from that would be all the information, or probably a good portion of the information we'd need for a strategic plan. There was quite a bit of discussion. One of the committee members, who I respect very much, Bob Newman, he's retired fire chief from the city of San Luis Obispo. He had some definite ideas about how it should go. So we're going to work together when I get back from my vacation and then take that back through ESAC one more time. So not to rush that, make sure everyone's on the same page, but some pretty good steps for that committee.
Right. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I just wanted to add on to the standards of cover assessment, because it's really, giving us where we're at now and then where we're going to need to be in the future, and looking at staffing and staffing models, equipment,
And it'll look at right, and revenue needs, so we can position ourselves. And if we need more money from the community, how do we step into that to provide the services?
And we're really looking at it from trying to have a third party that's not affiliated with Cal Fire or ex Cal Fire, to look at, fresh eyes looking at things, kind of giving us an audit essentially of what we are doing and versus what our contracts say and how we can change that in the future. Okay. Any director's announcements?
I have a couple, just a quick couple comments, closing comments even. One, the homeless issue, Palisades and Oklahoma, being on the Capslo board of directors, I know how serious this is. Everybody who lives in town knows how serious it is. The five-year plan, the county's essentially got the responsibility for this area. We have no direct link, but I'm going to pay attention to that plan. And if there's a way that we can help, even if it's support for groups like this that are making things happen, I think it's important. It's an issue that it's in some way shameful that the money that we spend when we can't solve this problem. The other thing is I want to say how nice it is that I can pick up a paper. Oopsie, we've got a story above the fold on the front page. Turn the page, two more stories, and not go into full court defense attack mode until I read the stories and see, okay, that's fair, that's good. It's just a factual reporting of what's going on. And so thank you for the relationship that you've developed with our local press. The stories are good, and it's just nice to be able to read them and say, yeah, that's what's going on. And we should have maybe a monthly CSD happenings kind of thing or something. This was a busy month, I think. And I guess the third thing is Labor Day's here. You got 3 days left to wear white. So, yeah. And watch for the kids on their way to school. People drive so fast, Los Osos Valley Road at 9th and 10th there. I just can't believe. Thank you.
Okay, there's no previously asked questions. So I'm going to ask, does anybody have a consent agenda item to pull? Nothing. Okay, public comment for items on the administrative committee reports and consent agenda.
If you'd like to make a comment online, please raise your hand and come up to the podium in person.
We're going to agendize that on our, it'll be our next board meeting. You could. That's probably the best way to make a public comment about it again.
And I'll probably be reaching out to you to just make sure we're covering the things that would help. It'd be from our perspective, but I just want to make sure. Yeah, I'll be back in the office September 19th. So anytime after that.
Okay, thank you.
There's one comment online.
Okay, great.
Emily Miggins, please unmute yourself.
I just wanted to say quickly to Ron, might be a good move, maybe to Matt, but I had two comments, one from the former, still sitting board member at FSC about doing a little more outreach about ESAC meetings to our local focus group. We do have over 800 people kind of watching and engaging, not always engaging at that number on our Facebook page. So it's a good way to get the word out so that there's public participation in ESAC. I just thought I'd put that out there because two people were concerned that they didn't know about the ESAC meeting. Thanks.
Okay, yeah, it's a good comment.
Yeah, thank you, Emily. I'll make sure I get a hold of you.
Okay.
No more comments.
Great. Do we have a motion to approve the administrative committee reports and the consent agenda?
I'll move to approve those items.
Second that motion.
Okay. I think
you can just take a voice vote.
Yeah. So all those in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Okay, so future agenda items, I think we discussed those, talking about writing a letter in support of the work that needs to be done on Palisades and bringing a BMC discussion to the UAC to start in October. Okay, with that, thank you everybody for your participation very, very much. Any closing comments?
Enjoy your vacation.
Thank you.
Yeah, enjoy.
Yep, it is October
6th, I believe.
First Thursday of every month.
Yes, October 6th is our next board meeting. All right, thank you everybody. Meeting adjourned.
Good night.